Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.
From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, as border communities celebrate a victory against building a border wall, Abbott's River Barrier is about to be built. Solar power is saving the Texas grid during the record-breaking heat, and Texas leaders aren't happy about that. And how forensic hypnosis was finally banned from Texas courtrooms. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. On Friday, June 30th, Governor Greg Abbott reissued his continuing declaration of a border security disaster, which he began 2 years ago. His declaration claims that the surge of individuals unlawfully crossing the Texas-Mexico border pose an ongoing and imminent threat of disaster for a number of Texas counties. And next week, Abbott's planned border barrier in the middle of the Rio Grande is expected to be complete near Eagle Pass in Maverick County. The announced completion date is July 7th. The barrier will be 1,000 feet long and consists of very large red spheres. The Texas-Mexico border is 1,250 miles long, and it's unclear if Abbott will try to install his floating wall along the entire border. And it's unclear if Abbott's 1,000-foot barrier in Eagle Pass will be allowed to remain after it's installed. Experts on the international law that governs the river that is shared by the United States and Mexico say Abbott has gone rogue, and there's nothing to prevent Mexico from removing the barrier after even the smallest portion of it moves into its territory. And groups like the Rio Grande International Study Center, based in Laredo, are watching and planning on responding in some way to this installation. Tricia Cortez is the executive director of the Rio Grande International Study Center, and they're celebrating a victory this week against a legal remnant of the Trump border wall, which they prevented from being built.
Huge, this announcement from DHS this week to rescind the waivers of law that were dropped on Webb and Zapata counties back in 2020 to expedite construction of the border wall. So we're the first border community along the entire U.S.-Mexico border that has prevailed in getting DHS to rescind those waivers. The waivers of law, to me, are the most egregious part of the border wall construction, because what happens is the 2005 Real ID Act, which was passed after 9/11, and it mainly deals with like driver's licenses and IDs. Well, they inserted a section in there that gives the DHS secretary vast powers to waive all sorts of federal laws, and it only happens on the border. So there's this great disenfranchisement that happens, because when they do that, it's in perpetuity. And what happens if they deem something that's, quote, border security to build border barrier? We no longer have access or due process to use federal laws that any other community or citizen in the United States would have. The Clean Water Act, Safe Drinking Water Act, Safe Disposal Act, endangered species, antiquities, indigenous grave sites. The border will always remain vulnerable because of that section in the Real ID Act that is at the root of a lot of problems that we end up facing when you have extremists come into office at the White House and want to do these types of projects on our lands. That section of the Real ID Act needs to be repealed. In the meantime, what happened this week is huge for us and all border communities to take note of and inspiration from.
So this effectively kills a border wall that would be on the river with Zapata and Webb counties?
Well, what happened in 2021, the new DHS secretary, he ended up canceling the four border wall construction contracts that had been dropped on Webb and Zapata counties in 2020, and that would have confiscated and destroyed everything along 71 river miles, all of Webb County, which includes Laredo, and a huge section of Zapata County up to Falcon Reservoir. We mobilized a very diverse, strong coalition that was relentless. When the administration changed, we became the only community on the border to have border wall contracts rescinded and terminated. But the waivers of law, which had been dropped on Webb and Zapata in order to build the border wall itself, those were still in place. So this announcement this week, because of this lawsuit that had been filed back in July of 2020, 3 years ago, is a huge victory for us. Major David versus Goliath battle that the people won.
Governor Greg Abbott has his own plans for a border wall, but it's not a wall per se. It's like this floating wall that goes down the middle of the Rio Grande. Is supposed to begin construction, or construction may have already begun. What do you know about that?
Well, when we first heard about this, we thought it was a joke. And it makes no sense that anyone would think this is a good idea to install or somehow anchor a massive buoy system in the Rio Grande, which is an international river, and it's a highly mobile river that changes all the time, and it's constantly shifting because of forces on it, winds and currents and flows and precipitation, flood events. I mean, we have a lot of questions, and frankly, we just see this as Texas-sized folly. And of course, it's presented to us by people who are not from the border, that don't live here, and they're doing this for political theater at a tremendous cost to taxpayers, and people should be outraged about that. Almost $1 million for 1,000 feet. When there's so much more needs here than to do something as silly as that.
So how much would that add up to for the whole river? I mean, Abbott's proposing he wants it from, up and down the entire river.
I need to do that calculation, David. I'm not sure, but I'm sure it's just extraordinary.
So he's got the plan is for like these giant orange balls. They look like they're the size of an SUV, and then they're going to be anchored into the river, and it's a chain of them. And the intent is to prevent anyone from swimming across the river. But I guess that would also include wildlife. I mean, this is a living river, an important part of an ecosystem. What would that mean?
I mean, we need to know that. What are the impacts of doing this? Because millions of people depend on that water in the river. It's a highly distressed river system. It still ranks as one of the 10 most endangered rivers in the world. So our governor to present such an idea that would impact it that way, where there's going to be to where there's going to be disturbances to fish species in that river channel? Will there be encroachment on Mexican territory? And I think one of the bigger questions we have, too, is that eventually those buoys are going to come loose, whether it's the next big flood event. And so what is going to happen when those big, huge buoy apparatus contraptions get loose? They're going to cause damage. They're going to hit structures. They're going to create changes to the channel. Erosion is going to happen. All of these things that are bad for river systems.
Has there been any kind of environmental impact study done that you know of?
Not that we're aware of, and that certainly should be done. I mean, we see it as a project that ignores just the basic principles of river science, and it's doomed to fail. because this is a living organism that changes all the time, and they are eventually going to break loose. And is it really worth doing that for a photo op to get political points? And we certainly think that we deserve a lot better here in South Texas from those folks in Austin.
And this was done just by Governor Greg Abbott's decision. There was no law, no process, no public hearings, no discussion, no scientific inquiry. What does that tell you about what kind of world we're living in?
The way they view the border and the way they view us here in South Texas, it's really sad. And it's just another chapter in South Texas of this really extreme and discriminatory view of who we are, as if we don't matter, as if we're second-class citizens. And it's just another chapter in that book. And our community is mobilizing, and we're not putting up with nonsense like that. And, you know, we fought really, really hard to defeat the border wall from being constructed here. You know, we're going to push back. They can't come in here. And, you know, the story of South Texas, it's so deeply tied to water and that river, and it's tied to land and those of us who live here. And it's deeply tied to theft of land and the disenfranchisement of people here through certain policies and laws. But we're awake now, and we're not going to put up with that sort of treatment anymore. And we deserve so much better, and we're going to demand so much better and so much more from our elected officials in D.C. and Austin.
Tricia Cortez is the executive director of the Rio Grande International Studies Center. Without wind and solar power, Texas would be a very different place this week. The record high temperatures have caused record high demands for electricity, and the old portion of the grid, the old declining coal and gas-fired power plants, just couldn't keep up. You may have noticed that Texas did not have to tolerate rolling blackouts, and that's because of wind and solar. They supplied the power that Texans needed. And this is despite the barriers that the Texas legislature has put in the way of development for renewable power. The Guardian's climate reporter, Darna Knorr, has written about this in her story. Solar helps Texas carry energy load as heat wave puts power grid to test.
Texas is really, obviously, for decades has been known as an oil and gas leader, but it's also a leader in solar and wind power. And, you know, amid this sort of wild and record-breaking heat wave, an atypically large number of Texas's aging and rundown coal and gas-fired power plants have failed. And that's really troubling because, you know, obviously Texas is the only state in the U.S. that has its own grid, meaning that the state can access very little power from other states. But there's been a really important factor that's been bailing out the grid, and that's solar. I talked to one analyst, Doug Lewin, who is a consultant with Stoic Energy, who said that he thinks that actually the additional solar that Texas has brought online in recent years has been determinative in making the difference between having outages and not having outages. So in other words, it's the reason that Texas has actually been able to survive this heat dome without rolling blackouts.
It's also worth noting that the nuclear power that Texas has been running intermittently during this heat wave also.
Yes, totally. Gas plants, coal plants, a nuclear plant have all been knocked offline by the heat. And that's, you know, it's not a surprise. You know, heat puts a lot of stress on power plants. And then also, again, a number of these plants are aging. They're really run down. They're in desperate need of repairs that they have not been getting. And so, you know, not a huge surprise that they're failing under this much stress.
But it makes sense. If the sun is shining, we're being burnt up by this incredible sunshine. Why not capture some of it and turn it into electricity so that we can at least deal with it?
Exactly. And that's exactly what's happening. Texas has doubled its supply of solar since early 2022. And that's especially important during heat waves like this. You know, as you said, the same sun that's, you know, being that's beating down on buildings, that's been deadly for people who are hiking on park trails in Texas, is also the sun that's powering electricity that's coming from solar panels. So on these really hot, sunny days, solar performs exceptionally well.
So simultaneously, while Texas is using renewables to keep the lights on, the AC running, the refrigerators working during these heat waves, we're still getting lawmakers in Texas who are in public bad-mouthing renewables and painting a picture as if they are not reliable and that it's something that Texas should not invest in. In the recent legislative session, Senate Bill 2627 was passed, which created the Texas Energy Fund for ERCOT, is a $10 billion fund, and it is specifically for dispatchable generation, but it excludes electric battery storage facilities. This is solely for like natural gas-powered plants that could be turned on during these heat waves. And, you know, in this his statement talking about this, you know, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick was expressing that this was necessary. I'll read exactly what he wrote in his statement. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick said that this was necessary because of Winter Storm Uri. It made it clear that Texas needed more reliable, dispatchable power because renewable energy sources failed to keep the lights on for millions of Texans. Well, that's not what happened.
Totally.
The passage of this bill, $10 billion, a giveaway for the natural gas industry, which is really not going to be not the best use to shore up the grid.
Absolutely. I think you're really right to point out, you know, that this narrative sort of started with Winter Storm Uri in some ways. Of course, you know, that freeze knocked out power for millions of people across Texas. And, you know, Governor Greg Abbott and many others were really quick to blame renewable power, especially frozen wind turbines. That was the sort of terminology that was used. But a number of independent reports found that it's actually, you know, the failure of gas and fossil fuel power plants was actually a larger factor in that grid failure during the freeze. And so as one analyst I talked to said, you know, this is all clearly politically based rhetoric. It's not based on any sort of logic or data. And yet, you know, this is not, it's not the only time we saw it. As you mentioned, you know, it was used as a sort of as a logic to support increasing it costs on wind and solar energy providers. This past session, during a heat wave last summer, a number of Texas Republican lawmakers again said that renewables cause power outage risk due to peaking demand. But energy analysts, independent energy analysts, contested that at the time too. And so, you know, I think that it's a really easy scapegoat to say that because renewable power is intermittent, meaning it doesn't work at all times. You know, obviously, wind power needs wind to be blowing for it to work. The solar panels are not going to produce energy when it's dark outside. And despite this, I think Texas is seeing that these intermittent renewable forms of energy can work really well together and can form a really, really reliable base for the grid.
And we're seeing the market really make the decisions that the legislature could not. If we had a legislature that was working in conjunction with the market to these, where the market is going, things would get these more smoothly and would get there faster. But it's interesting to note a couple of bills that were floated in the legislative session that did not pass, Senate Bill 624, which proposed an onerous permitting requirements for wind and solar renewable power facilities. That would have crippled the industry. That didn't pass. Yep. Also, Senate Bill 624, introducing new transmission fees for renewable energy facilities, that also failed. So I'm trying to make what is the conclusion to make from this? You could see that the legislature, they're trying to prop up the oil and gas industry, but not really exactly get in the way of the development of where the market is going with renewables.
Well, it's interesting. I think, you know, obviously the Texas legislature is not at all a monolith. And there are some, you know, even right-wingers in the Texas legislature that realize that, you know, there's real money to be made, frankly, in the renewable sector. And so, you know, there I think is a real sort of acknowledgement from some that that the energy transition is happening, and that, you know, frankly, not that I personally think that we should continue to have fossil fuels online, but I think that there are some who are starting to realize that, you know, just sort of supporting the new renewables industry doesn't mean anything about getting rid of the fossil fuels that Texas already has. With that said, obviously there were a spate of bills that that lawmakers introduced this past session, and some of them did pass. You know, as you mentioned, one of them would impose these new costs on solar and wind projects. Another, Senate Bill 833, means that insurers in Texas can no longer account for ESG criteria, so that's environmental, social, or governance criteria, when setting rates for almost all forms of insurance under a bill. And so that means that it's basically an attack on this sort of environmental, social, and governance criteria, which could also sort of have some negative implications for the renewable energy economy.
Darna Knorr is a climate reporter for The Guardian. Her story is, solar helps Texas carry energy load as heat wave puts power grid to test. Starting September 1st, hypnosis will no longer be a thing in Texas courtrooms. In the most recent legislative session, lawmakers passed a bill that banned the practice, and Governor Greg Abbott allowed it to become law. And while opponents of courtroom junk science are applauding this development, it does little to nothing for those who have been convicted or even sent to death row based on this discredited practice. Maurice Chaumont has written about it. He's a journalist with the Marshall Project and the host of the podcast, Just Say You're Sorry.
For years now, advocates have tried to pass a bill like this to ban the use of testimony in courtrooms based on hypnotizing witnesses. This is something that's been banned in many, many states, either by the courts or the legislatures. But Texas was always the holdout. The Texas Rangers were known to be a big fan of using hypnosis. They'd used it in a lot of cases. And finally, the legislature, there was enough momentum basically to finally ban the practice. The Rangers themselves had given up on it a couple of years ago, which I think helped create the momentum. And then the legislators sort of tailored the bill in a very specific way so that it wouldn't get vetoed as it had 2 years ago. I also think it's worth saying in this context, though, that there are many, many people in Texas prisons who were convicted on the basis of hypnosis. Many of those people are guilty, but some of those people very likely are innocent, and this bill does nothing to help them. They're still in prison, and it's sort of up to them and their lawyers to go to court and say, you know, hey, there's some real flaws with my case. You know, a witness was hypnotized. The only reason I'm in prison is because someone under hypnosis identified me.
And there are people on death row.
There are. There's a guy named Charles Flores who is still facing execution. He recently lost at the Supreme Court to have his case heard. And now he is vulnerable to have an execution date set. And really the key piece of evidence in his case that puts him at the scene of the crime, it was the murder of a woman in the Dallas area, is that a neighbor to the house where the crime occurred, you know, saw two men getting out of a car and identified one of them as Charles Flores, having been hypnotized. The risk there is that when someone has been hypnotized, they're, according to scientists, researchers, psychologists, more likely to confabulate, to have incorrect memories really get locked in as accurate memories. You know, we all think of the sort of images we have in our mind that we're not very confident about. Well, after a hypnosis session, you're a little more likely to say, well, you know, was the man Latino? Was he Black? Was he wearing a red shirt or a blue shirt? That with a hypnosis session, that ambivalence can kind of wash away and you're left with a much stronger position of that was the guy. And it was that kind of testimony that put Charles Flores on death row. And ultimately, you know, we all have to ask, if Charles Flores is executed, are we comfortable, you know, executing him in all of our names based on such flimsy evidence?
Right, because the witness, Jill Barganier, originally said it was a thin guy, a white guy with long hair. She insisted on that, and she failed to pick out Flores in multiple photo lineups. And then it wasn't until after she was hypnotized, even during hypnosis, she kept insisting it was a thin white guy with long hair, which does not fit Flores at all. it was like a year later that she finally said it was Flores. So the question is, did hypnosis change her recollection?
Right. And I think there's a question here of, you know, the human mind is incredibly complicated. There's a lot we don't understand about it. So I always approach these things with humility. It's possible she saw Flores, but if the only sort of evidence that we really have is her saying that after multiple times saying it was, you know, a tall man with long hair that looked nothing like Flores, and then she changes her description after the hypnosis session, it raises the question of whether, you know, during that session, she was in a more suggestible state and maybe some details were given to her, or perhaps, you know, she was in this session, just sort of loosely associating different people that she had seen and started to kind of plant someone who looked like Flores in the scene herself. These are things that are hard to access because, you know, we don't have access to the images that are in people's minds. It's based on what they say. And that, I think, is a reason why psychologists think that forensic hypnosis is so potentially dangerous, that you're getting these descriptions that people feel really confident about after the session, but before the session, they weren't really so confident at all.
So now we have in Texas, or we will, I guess on September the 1st, this becomes law, a ban on forensic hypnosis for courtroom testimony. But it still can use forensic hypnosis to, what, do police work, gather evidence?
It's possible that they still can. You know, there are some trainers still going around Texas teaching people how to do forensic hypnosis. And these people, I should say, claim that, you know, when there are problems, it's really just a lack of proper training, and that, you know, all hypnosis does is put you in a very sort of relaxed state where it's easier to remember things. This was the description given to me by a Texas Ranger who had performed hypnosis on dozens of people. This was in the podcast that I made. But there are still hypnotists out there who want to work with police and who are selling their services and training police officers to use hypnosis. Now, when someone is a witness has gone under hypnosis, they can't testify in court to the things that they, you know, spoke about while they were under hypnosis that they were hypnotized to try to access. But police could still use hypnosis in their investigations to try to get to someone. So, for example, in the case of Larry Driscoll, a man who's been convicted of murder and is still trying to clear his name in Texas, in that case, a witness underwent hypnosis and described a man who committed the crime, a sketch based on that hypnosis-induced description, went out to the media and led to Larry Driscoll, who was eventually convicted of the crime. Now, there was no trial, so this ban would not have affected a case like that. And it's an example of how police could still use hypnosis to, you know, find particular suspects, right, and make them the lead suspect in a case, whereas before they were just, you know, a person who just sort of were living their lives. And after a hypnosis session, they become a suspect because of a description created in this very flawed way. So there are people like that who are still in prison, who are trying to be exonerated, who are still convicted of crimes as serious as rape and murder, who are in prison for, based on this kind of hypnosis. The Texas Rangers and many large urban police departments have discontinued the use of hypnosis in their departments, but there is still a risk of it being used by individual detectives in, you know, more rural departments and that sort of thing.
Maurice Chamas is a journalist with the Marshall Project. He is the host of the podcast, Just Say You're Sorry. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. You can find past episodes of Texas Matters on our website at tpr.org. And you can download, subscribe, and rate us wherever you get cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.